Right now, I'd like to turn the floor over to your local representative, Mr. Representative Brian Rogers, and you will conduct the meeting.
So this is a hearing of the House Labor and Commerce Committee, and I requested the addition of the energy audit issue to today's hearing based in part on complaints that I've received from various people about the program, but particularly in response to the article in the Fairbanks Daily News Miner about a week and a half ago. I felt that there were some issues raised in the News Miner's article that deserved a response, and I thought that perhaps a hearing like this could help clear the air about the issues raised in the News Miner article, could provide an opportunity for auditors and the general public to comment on the program, and finally for the committee to get some ideas. There was legislation considered last year which would have revised the audit program. That legislation is not before this committee. However, it's quite possible that there will be additional consideration of the audit program during the next legislative session. And I thought this might be an opportunity for people to present suggestions. We asked Lloyd Pernella, the director of the Division of Energy, to come up and begin making a presentation, and then we'll take general public comment.
Lloyd, you want to just come up here, please? Thank you very much for taking out your schedule and coming up from Montclair. We appreciate it.
No problem. What I thought I would do is just sort of roughly give you a presentation where we're at and what we've done since this fiscal year. I took over the directorship in June 4th of this year of the division, and sort of been on a fast track, getting caught up with all the programs and the different nuances. What has happened when we, as you know, the conservation program ran out of funds because of the high demand last fiscal year. In turn, through the legislature this year, we in turn received monies which will probably yield us about 40,000 audits for homes at this time. This, as you know, leads into a $300 refund for retrofitting houses for items that have been identified as improvements, and in turn allows for loans for alternatives or for conservation in a particular house. We have made a number of changes in the program, and this has resulted in some controversy amongst the people who have been the auditors and on their contracts. In turn, we have been the victim of, let's just call it creative writing as far as press is concerned. The article that Representative Rogers referred to earlier in the News Miner basically did not reflect anything that has happened. I mean, it was all in recent history. Everything that was pointed out there is old hat. It's been published in old newspapers. It was gone in the legislative hearings on this whole program last legislature. All of this was brought out well and documented. It was unfortunate that occurred. There was one minor retraction of part of the article in the following newspaper. In a conversation with the editor later on, it was stated that their intent is to follow through with another subsequent article documenting what changes have occurred. But basically, what I'd like to do is focus on some of the positive things that we're at right now, and in turn, the first thing that occurred was basically to put the whole audit program into the marketplace as far as the determination of the fee that an auditor would receive for performing the service on the state. He in turn receives $10 from a homeowner. But the main idea here was to, we received a significant amount of input from various auditors saying that they wanted so many dollars to do this program, and before they would enter this, and the range of those numbers was quite large. And we had people who said they would not do audits unless they received less than $140 or something per audit, or whatever. So given all of that controversy and my own coming into this from the business side of it, the idea was to put it out to a bid system. The rationale for that is that the audit itself is a fairly well-defined procedure, that what has to be done is well in place. The training that an auditor has to go through brings him to a point where he can address audit needs. Also, we felt that there was enough control mechanisms, which I'll get into in a little bit, that we could ensure quality audits would occur. So we saw no reason not to go to a bidding process. As a result of that, whereas previously in the springtime we were looking at a flat fee which had a base of about $150, we averaged out about $84 across the state this year, which to us from a management point of view is somewhat of a success story, because we've almost doubled the number of audits for a given tax dollar. But consequently to that, we also dropped a number of auditors who were potential contractors to this. And I think what we're looking at here as far as this bidding process is a learning curve where people are didn't know what to expect. It was the very first time. And the results are well published, and I'm sure we'll see the gap lessening. In some areas, we varied from $60 to $180 for an action which would perform the same service, namely going into the home and conducting the audit. Other things that we have done, we have changed the audit form itself to make it much simpler, to make it of some use to the homeowner himself that he could read. The copy of the brochure they receive and the at the time of the audit, and the audit itself is in the blue packets that are on your table. We further, the Senate had a letter of intent on two audits a day, which is sort of a reaction to stories about auditors making great piles of money in a given day. And our own analysis of this has probably shown that maybe two or three audits would be a day would be a better business number. We're getting quite a few auditors who are trying to perform in a business sense. If they go to a house and no one is there, they basically lost half a day of work. So possibly we're evaluating the two and three component. But the legislature last year was certainly cognizant of the problems of people making mega dollars on this program, or at least the rumors are running that way. And I think we've well addressed that through contract procedures, which gets us into our third major area, and that was where we instituted control processes this year. We're shortly going to have a computer program which will randomly select audits, one out of four, and run them through, similar to an IRS check, make sure the calculations are correct, and make sure the auditor is doing what he should be about. If something's awry there, we in turn will get back to that auditor and do whatever corrections are necessary. Another area of control that we're entering into is field auditing of the audit. What we're looking at here is a sampling rate of about two audits out of 100 per auditor. And it just makes good sense that a auditor knows somebody is coming after him one of the days and to make sure that he's doing what he should be doing. Our procedures in this is that if we find people are in violation of the contract or not performing auditors, we are very aggressive in getting into that situation. And I think we're...
Have you yet?
Yes, in a number of instances, which... but that, I would say they were probably... We got on those immediately, and that was within the first month of operation on this term. So you don't... Being Alaskans, I think we're all familiar with that. You don't go into 40,000 Alaskan homes and run roughly 78 contracts with a couple hundred auditors without incurring some criticism. And the main things that we're looking at here is the quality of the audit and the fact that the billings we receive from the state are correct and meet, or just good, solid contract performance.
No, on the idea of statistics, could you give us, 40,000 is what you want to do this year.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea what we've done in fiscal year 81?
We did about 7,800.
7,800? Looking specifically at Fairbanks, you know how many housing units there are that perhaps someone said we have this amount to look at?
I don't have the number of housing units here. Our rationale for distributing the funds this year was based on a population basis within legislative district. And so that was the criteria.
From that we can say, maybe 2.5 population per house.
Right.
Then get an idea of that. Fairbanks, where the Fairbanks, maybe 20,000 folks.
25, 30, somewhere in there.
Then, if I may, just two more questions on that. 25 to 30, we'll put down here. How many were audited last year, sir? In Fairbanks?
So, we have a packet here called Program Status, which is a sheet in the packet.
Fairbanks, for example, last year,
1,700. 1,700, and you want to do 4,300 this year.
Through January
31st. Okay. All right, good. Thank you.
What we've found, too, is that the demand for this program this year has been very, very well received. In any program like this, if you take the total housing stock in Alaska, you're probably talking maybe 150,000 houses based on what census numbers you're believing. In turn, the attractiveness of this program is, you know, it's a matter of marketing, a matter of perception on different people. So I personally doubt that we'll ever see 140,000 homes audited and retrofitted in the state. But at this point in time, we have the demand has kept pace with the funding. And in many instances, auditors are booked out through this cycle of bidding, which ends in January. Our intent is that in this first pass was to allocate 60% of the money, and then the next pass, which will run from February through July next year, the remainder, which will probably definitely be 40% plus whatever was not realized this year. The other major change which we have realized is to put together a bush program, and due to the nature of the communities that we're dealing with there, we're approaching those on a community by community type of basis. The rigor of that is very intriguing as far as getting contact and people and into the village and making, just setting up the program. It is perhaps our biggest challenge as far as the administration of this program.
Could I break in for just a moment? I'm sorry, I'm going to have to leave in a few minutes for a doctor's appointment. I'll be back later for the hearing, but I did have a couple of questions. One of the problems that auditors have brought to me has been occasionally the difficulty of dealing with an office in Anchorage when you're located in Fairbanks. And as a result, this year in the budget, there were positions for a Fairbanks office. What's the status on that?
What we are doing there is putting the positions together, and we hope to be bringing those positions in around December, is what we're hoping for. What I'm saying hoping for is because we have to use the existing registers and whether people are in Fairbanks ready for those jobs. But we would use this as an opportunity to solicit people to get on the ES2 and the ES1 energy specialist registers.
We've been hearing all week about the problems of dealing with the state personnel office, so I think
that's one of my favorite subjects.
the other question I had brought to me by a couple of different companies who are currently doing audits. Several of the companies will hire auditors, other certified auditors, and essentially on a subcontracting basis, so they work. And they say that in order to even a certified auditor, it takes several weeks to get the contract amended to bring on another auditor under a given contract. And the difficulty comes if an auditor, say, wants to work for a month in Fairbanks and then work for a month in Anchorage, there's a 3-week lag where they have to get recertified on a different contract. Is it possible that something could be done to allow any certified auditor to work for any contracting company?
Well, we've expedited that process, and if, you know, 78 contracts we have out right now, it would be well that, you know, a contractor is anticipating adding people, or that he in turn would you know, take those forms and submit them to us. But, we can usually get those out fairly quickly. It's just a matter, that's under my signature, it doesn't have to go through Juno. And we can realize a couple days once we receive the form. Quite often this will occur through like a telephone call, and then in turn we will have to type up the form and send the form back for them to sign, and they send it back to us. We're aware of the situation.
I guess
cleaned that up.
My thought is the initial contract could say, you know, audits to be formed by any certified auditor, and then if they change auditors and if they have to fire somebody and bring someone else on, they can do it without having to notify you. As long as the person is certified, I guess I don't understand why you have to go and rewrite this.
Yeah, well, the idea here was the control on the number of audits done by an auditor per day. Mm-hmm. And the idea was our main control on that is at a contract basis. And so we would have a auditor uniquely assigned to a contract. And that's what has to be amended if someone's going from Anchorage to Fairbanks.
Thank you, I'll be back.
This day, a couple of other things which I think the committee should be aware of. We, at this year, one of our targets is to establish division regulations, which will affect auditor certification and decertification. Currently, our control in this whole process is through the contracts itself. Our feeling is that it would be very good and appropriate to be able to certify people from a fairly legal point of view as opposed to just a contractual arrangement which we have. The other things that we hope to get into regs this year are the bid procedures for audits, auditing contracts, and in turn the audit itself we may be able to put into regs also. Some things which are occurring on the side is one is federal programs are also being zapped or removed by President Reagan this year, which affects the state in the sense of weatherization monies, extension monies, which in the past ran was the budget for this division before we picked up the programs last year, are going away. Appropriate technology grants, which were the small grants to individuals who wanted to do something innovative, will also be disappearing. Congress is considering block grants to the states. And there's a question of whether that will survive all of the committees and also survive the president when he's looking at his budget. So we in turn this year are facing cutbacks in the staffing, whereas before we would use these federal positions to facilitate Alaska's needs. In many instances, that will not be there. In this next budget cycle, we have put into the process at this point in time a couple of things which we think are fairly interesting. One would be to expand the audit program and the grants program, which is currently limited to residential houses, to commercial entities. In other words, small businesses, small commercial establishments. For example, if you have a rather large apartment house, you do not qualify to have audits done nor receive any loans or grants for that complex. We receive many small businesses calling, seeing if they can receive a loan. Our intent in this would not be so much to go to grants, but just to provide an audit procedure and maybe some cost-sharing basis and allow them to get into the loan program. And I might add that the benefits for this whole program are well received. If you look at the current level of effort with 40,000 and in turn assuming just a 50% subscription to the grants program, just we're going to realize probably the equivalent of about 85,000 barrels a day of oil, heating oil, saved in the state for this effort this year, which if you apply the appropriate multipliers comes out about $4 or $5 million savings in a given year. I had to say oil equivalents there because Anchorage, we have perhaps some of the cheapest gases in the world right now. And so Alaska sort of has the best of situations and the worst of situations as far as heating costs.
That's only on theory. Is there a backup from what you did last year, what the Department of Division did last year, and show how many people follow through with the recommendations of the audit?
Yeah, on this program status sheet here, basically what we realized was about 40% of the people, as a matter of fact, it's exactly 42% of the people who had it done in the spring of last year, fiscal year 81, went to the grants program. Part of this we attribute to being the publicity that surrounded the program when it ran out of money, as far as the audits were concerned. There was still grant money, but that, and we sent subsequent correspondence to the people who had audits, and we are in a reminding type of mode to them that they have this opportunity available to them. The main idea is to make it clear and precise as to what, there's been a lot of criticism as to what the form means and how you fill it out and who you apply to. So we're trying to make that more efficient.
When you talk about new regulations and stuff like that, don't we have a sunset on this program? Wasn't it supposed to be created, innovated, and done in 2, 3, 4 years?
Now, right, this is, last year was the very first year the program came into being. This, well, obviously is the second year. I think what we talked about a little earlier about targeting, you know, how many houses are in the state and stuff, that I would suspect that we're going to reach a point here where we're going to peak in the demand for this. In other words, auditors out in the streets will not be booked up solid. They'll have to start going to look for business. We haven't reached that peak. If you look at targeting only 50% of the houses, the program would have to go another year. But I would concur that this should be a sunset closure on this program, because once you've retrofitted the house, that's it. We're dealing with a finite population. In turn, new houses being built, this division, per legislation, has the mandate to put in place lighting and thermal standards statewide, which will affect any house that's built with state money. So if that, and our intent is to go to hearings on those this spring to get that in place, which means if you apply for a national loan for your new house, you will have to have an R20 wall or an R30 wall or whatever, maybe 12 is probably more, but that'll have to be in place, and I think that'll be well received, that people today are very cognizant of the heating bills and expenses associated with this. But that program should take care of new houses, and we've performed a retrofit, so that's, I don't see what else we can do.
When you make take a bid for services, do you distinguish between multi-complex units and single units and stuff like that? Like in my complex, there's about 100 condos, and a gentleman and lady came in knocking on the door and wanted to know if I wanted my plates audited. And I said, well, can you give me some specs on it, which I already knew, I just wanted to see what they were going to say. Well, it costs you $10, and we'll show you. He said the group here decided that they would like to have their whole complex done. And I said, what group? He said, well, we got them covered. In contact with the president that we elect each year, you know, just a common mm-hmm. neighborhood association. And they said, yeah, come on over, because there was no cost to the condominium. But yeah, they get $10. All the units are the same. 3 windows, 1 door. Don't know anything you can do. I'm on the second floor, so my heat's less. But it seemed to me that they said, well, if you sign here, give us permission, then it costs you $10 and we can tell you what to do. I thought, you know, come on. If he's doing that for 100 units in my area, that's a nice paycheck.
Oh, yeah, especially when they're identical, I think.
Yes, they're all perfect.
The key to the auditing program is I don't know, personally, I'd probably say maybe 60% of the import is the dialogue and the discussion that goes on between the auditor and the homeowner. And the idea is to that each one of us, in the way our own lifestyle proceeds, have a way of living that we don't necessarily tie our heating fuel bills into what we're about, what improvements we could make into that. So whereas the physical situation is identical in what your situation you're describing, you know, maybe from unit to unit, it's an easy job as far as you know, walking from one to the one as far as the physical stuff, but as far as explaining what energy conservation is about, mm-hmm. that is a key element.
We've had a couple
instances where people would say, for example, trailers is another example where, you know, you might have 20 different types of trailers in Alaska. I'm just picking a number. But once you've audited one of those, I mean, it's the same to the next one. But what we insist there is that the formal audit procedure occur with each resident in a condominium, or also the price they receive is different when you go into a duplex from us as opposed to a single resident.
No questions. Well, it looks like we have a lot of people here to give some testimony, so if you will, Mr. Pennell, I'd like to have you as a resource, because I'm sure we're going to be asked questions that we don't know answers to.
Okay. Well, Jen Brewer, the manager of the conservation program, is with me here, too, and so she'll be...
Okay.
So I don't have the answers, maybe Jen.
Giannis, do you have any testimony you'd like to give in addition to what Mr. Pennell did? Thank you, sir. The first person that marked on the list they'd like to give testimony is Mr. Bob Noreen. Sir, would you come forward? Please?
My name is Bob Noreen, and I'm I have an auditing contract in Fairbanks under the corporate company name of Northern Energy. I'm also a adjunct professor in engineering management at the university at this time. There's been some controversy over the procedures of the contracting during this period, the most recent period, and unfortunately I was one of the quoted persons in this article in the newspaper, and I think I need to state on a public record that it was a misquote, and it was corrected in a subsequent correction. The factor that I find from a business management point of view is that you've trained and created a workforce in Fairbanks and other parts of Alaska that paper-wise show new businesses, but I think you also ought to consider the fact that you're going to put many of these businesses out of business quite shortly, because this is a demand market. And once you go over the peak, when you're making a bid based on X number of audits that you have to solicit, or X number of audits that will come in from natural demand, is quite a different story. There are 8,000 reachable homes in Fairbanks through the telephone directory. I find that the stimulation of energy conservation in Alaska is the only across-the-board energy practice that we can jointly utilize. Fairbanks, Golden Valley customers are paying, I would estimate, 13 cents a kilowatt, while the Chugach Electric is probably at about 3 cents a kilowatt. And that doesn't make much of an impact on someone until he sees a electric bill of over $3,000 in a local area. At this time, the appraisers are not totally evaluating that cost. Gold Bar's Alaska Housing has no consideration of that heat cost. And in the winter months, they far surpass the mortgage payment. And it's something in Fairbanks that is unique. We have a temperature inversion. We have a stimulation to put more pollutants in the air through alternate energy. We have no natural gas. There is a extreme temperature differential between the summer and the winter also. From that impact, I've found that there's been a stimulation in the economy just because of the higher oil and electric costs. We have a boom cycle in Fairbanks of 1974 houses, several areas that are poorly constructed, and to cut out the audit program, I think, requires a follow-up and a tighter building code throughout the state, or else a continued audit program for newer homes. There is a maximum effective R value in a house, and I find very few construction contractors approaching that, although I find awareness of Alaska builders of doing a much better job in construction. 2x6 walls, R38 ceilings, boilers that utilize the excess heat from oil for heating the hot water. Golden Valley is a small electric company that is in a downward spiral right now. I find that the inverse rate structure for a residential home, an example would be a home in North Pole of 15,000 square feet that's kept records from 1973 and has practiced some very good and almost harsh conservation practices, has found that his bill has not gone down a penny because his kilowatt rate has gone from 7 to 9. You're going to find that in Delta. You'll find that in any outlying area outside of the MUS. The cost of an audit is not to work up 7 pages of material. It's for an educational value. If I audited 100 condominiums, I hope that I've educated 100 occupants who might live there, they might move elsewhere. Part of that conservation practice would to make them aware that their neighbor might leave their house at 50 degrees and you might leave yours at 70. You're heating your neighbor's house. They might not want to do that. The setback of thermostats when they go and come from work has a tremendous advantage. $10 that you spend for an audit is $10 for an education. There are many people in Alaska who want nothing more in the way of education, for free or for $10. We are not making a lot of money in this contract. We are going out of business. We are not getting upfront costs, and in the case of Northern Energy and several of the other companies in town, there are subcontractors. In my case, there are several employees that I will either have to finance out of past audit contracts, 18% loans, or other upfront costs. I would like to stimulate, and I know Brian has an alternate policy, but I would like to stimulate consideration of a center where there is a contract of some duration for, let's say, 1,000 audits would be an example, where the auditor does every audit that comes in the door. So I think you can see as the weather gets worse, I would much rather do an audit next door than one out on 22-mile Chena Hot Springs Road, or a fellow at Harding Lake, or one down in Delta. I have no travel reimbursement in this district. If you had a center where there was an auditing contract, and given a factual example of 1,000 audits for X number of dollars, and then a flat fee for every audit over 1,000, you would provide the contractor the overhead that he could hire employees. And I guarantee you, when you have employees instead of subcontractors, the performance raises, because I can fire people. Where I'm dealing with a subcontractor, if I fire him, I have lost, my resources is lacking. I don't have another subcontractor that I can plug in the next day. The other thing I think is necessary that will stimulate people to get to make use of this program is some type of access to assistance in doing the grants and doing the loans. I think it's important that you realize that the Division of Energy and Power Development is not the lending agency. There is a business loan office in this town that in sometimes I can suggest is at opposite ideology as to what qualifies for a $5,000 loan. I think there needs to be some assistance with a homeowner in what's turned into a difficult bureaucratic process in getting your $5,000 loan. And that is not the Division of Energy and Power at all that's involved in that. We have a unique situation where in the spring of this year, a duplex could be audited, receiving two audits, duplex owner receiving $10,000 in loans. The local loan officer has determined that now, as we're doing one audit per duplex, it only qualifies for a $5,000 loan. So you will have neighbors, one receiving 10, one receiving 5 at 5%. I'm very cognizant of the rising cost of fuel, and I think money invested today in any type of conservation is going to be payback tenfold in the future. There are terrible houses out there that, in Fairbanks particularly, you'll have people who are elderly especially, who are spending a lot of time in their retirement unable to meet their fuel bills. Across the board, I've seen Fairbanks Lumber, Spinards, and one of our subcontractors from Golden Valley, Vol, indicated that there's been a tremendous increase in the purchasing of insulating type of products. The people are becoming more aware of energy conservation, and I would like to just, in closing, mention that the trend of energy conservation in the United States today will equate to the finding of another Saudi Arabia by the year 2000, and I think that's an excellent start and an excellent approach. Utility districts in the lower 48 are doing much more than our utility districts are. There is in some utility districts, there's a no-interest loan program where they'll provide insulation, and they're finding that it's cheaper to gain back their kilowatts that way than by creating new power sources. And I think this is the proper direction. Conservation is here to stay. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Bettisworth.
Do you have any feeling for how many audits you do on houses, say, built since 75?
I have three categories of audits. The guy who's built his own house and wants to show it off, and he's done an excellent job, and he's going to get a thermal door, for example. And again, you know, he's spending a lot less on fuel than the next guy, but he's saving BTUs for the public at large. The other category is a 1974-75 electric house. Lackloy Hill, Upper Farmers Loop, big, huge barns that have sold for over $100,000, and when a homeowner gets in there, finds that ice built up on the walls. And the one house I don't find, I really can't give you a year frame, but the one house I don't find is the elderly home, the person who's older. There's
you
a
mean you don't find it?
We are not auditing homes for people over the age of, say, 40. And I think it's a lack of community.
What is elderly?
Well,
they're not catching the elderly.
It's
they're not catching the elderly.
Oh, but it's at 40.
It's elderly for another year or two. I find that 40 is about to break off. They're hearing about it. There is a reluctance to take a 5% loan when you're retired, for example. You don't want any more debts. But that doesn't mean they won't spend their own cash for it. There's a lack of education as to what $5,000 can earn in today's investment market also. They're used to a 5% passbook account. Stimulating that in the community might help. There are other programs that apply there. But I can't answer the 75.
In your comments, you sounded like you were critical of some contractors who are currently building houses. Do you know of anybody who are building, still building 4-inch walls? They're currently constructing in Fairbanks area?
No. I think probably one of your Aurora Borealis and Maiden Camp homes in this area are excellent built homes. There's design considerations that builders are not at yet. And I'll give you an example. A 24-inch center span between the studs. I think Axel could testify to the fact that that's an accepted building practice. But these fellows have gone through maybe 30 years of building, and they're afraid to drop down to that load number. A double wall with 2x4s instead of 2x6s, all is based on how much the materials are going to cost to resell a house. But I don't, I find some home builders who built a house with 2x4s. They're the owners. And
owner builders.
Mm-hmm, but not 2x6 is what we're using.
Is there any contact between the energy auditors and the Fairbanks Home Builders Association to try to establish some communication back and forth to encourage your better construction at the outset?
I think things like the seminar that Terry Dzinski sponsored and some of the other Alaska Land Centers have done quite a bit in that regard. On an individual basis, the contractor is now becoming aware of the audit and how that applies in his construction loan. And they'll come in with their plans and ask you to evaluate this building material versus another for the RV. So it's starting.
They are asking for audits of plans prior to construction.
That's available, but no, they're taking an additional. Let's say they're going to beef up a roof, and they'll look at that audit and consider that as part of the loan package. But they certainly could bring in to any auditor the building plans and have the plans audited. That's certainly capable. Axel Carlson has produced a program that a construction contractor could do it himself for that matter. The need for a building code outside of the city limits, I think, is something that would force that on everybody. We found that in California, that there was some reluctance by the contractors at first, but afterwards they adapted.
You mentioned that you have you contract out versus hire out auditors.
That's correct.
Why don't auditors do their own contract and getting their own? Why do they work? Would they work for you or subcontract to you?
One, they wouldn't have any business if they didn't. There's 10 subcontractors under Northern Energy, and five of them are very active auditors. They are receiving centralized management, place out of the cold and one thing, but mainly is what it is they're coming into work and they're getting their audit assignment and they're doing their audit and going back home. All questions are answered by the office, but they're primarily people who have bid and didn't receive a contract. That's primarily what it is. When you get in the bidding game, there's two things
bid,
you ask.
In other words, they bid too high, and so
yeah. You ask how many other auditors have they trained, and how many houses are left out there, and how many audits do I need to pay the overhead? Mm. You're dealing in a situation where there's no upfront cash, and we'll go 60 days here before we receive a penny. And for the gentleman that thought we made $1,700 a day, I'd sure like to see it. But, and I also want to point out that when you bid $150 an audit, if you hire someone on a consulting job, you certainly expect to pay him more because at the end of the contract, he's out of work. If you hire an employee, that benefits package and the security system goes along with it. I don't think it's an outrageous price. I think $10 for a homeowner is the old idea of have him put something in the hat so he realizes that he ought to listen instead of just sit there for a freebie.
Do you think, is there any argument anywhere for increasing the portion the homeowner pays from $10 to something more?
Your goal is to stimulate conservation. I wouldn't put up any more of a stumbling block between the homeowner. There are people who are extremely reluctant to any state program. This program has gotten concern and criticism. People expect you to come in with a lot of gadgets because they've seen it in a National Geographic ad. And, what you're really doing is steering them into trends. If they've got 1,000 square feet of ceiling with no insulation in it, that's where the heat's going. And there are people out there that are extremely uneducated, as we all are, in moisture problems. It's very apparent up here, and it's not so apparent down south. So there's people that are much more qualified than Matt and I am that are here that could talk about that. But I wouldn't raise any more barriers. Your goal is to audit as many homes in the state as you can, because we're all going to pay the price of energy utilization today, sometime in the future, and we're getting into a society where if your neighbor is a glutton in the way he heats his house, you're going to become upset about it. And if your fellow condominium owner has got a cooler room than you do, you're heating his house. So we're going to be more and more concerned about it.
I believe in that. My guy has his heat up. I'm on the second floor. Yeah, I can tell my bill between him. He's helping me.
I think you are. I'm finding Jim Price here in town has become very conscious of the appreciation value of the house when insulated. I think that would help. I think if your banking industry here started considering what's the insulation value of that house instead of what's your income and what's the square footage, I think you're going to get even more of a turn.
I want to ask a couple other things. You mentioned that, you know, what's going to happen with our short life of line of business. You said to me, you know, we're doing all these great things for the state. Now, what are you going to do to ensure my long life business? When in the first place, we felt that this was to be a short life type program to meet an immediate need. And those people who want to become
from a management point of view, I would like to see some centralized contract management, but I certainly don't expect you to continue an audit contract. It doesn't cost you a penny if I don't do an audit right now. If I, 2 years down the road, contract for 500 audits and I only do two, you don't pay for the 500. I think I'd be silly to contract for a large amount as the demand dwindles. The home is audited. I would assume the loan is going to be there for the reasonable future. And once a home is audited, you've taken care of one structure that's probably poorly built and it's going to exist on the marketplace. No, I'm not.
You talk about building code and ordinances. I know in Anchorage we do have building codes for various homes and personal structures and all. Do you not have such in Fairbanks and the borough for the city?
The borough does not.
Isn't that the point where to really be meaningful in the long run rather than state law? That ain't to see the state get involved, but maybe through a local ordinance.
For new buildings, yes.
For new building or homes or whatever. Has it been attempted to oppose the Fairbanks Assembly?
I think there has, but I can't address that.
It has, and they've turned it down.
Yeah.
I can tell you why sometime, probably.
You'll find if you ever take a look at a heated home in Barrow, the Corps of Engineers have provided them with all the free natural gas they want.
Yeah.
It's not unusual to have it on full burner and take your ice cubes off the walls.
Yeah. Well, of course, part of that is that we, you know, for a number of years, they began that in 65, 66, and they realized they had to burn it off someplace, and someone got the wise idea, let's channel it off the barrel. Another thing, you mentioned that the upfront cash, and I understand that. The other costs that you say, we aren't paying you to travel up Chena Highway or wherever. In your overall bidding, don't you take this into consideration that you're going to have a home next door and you're also going to have a home 10, 12 miles from you? And so you average out. I mean, if you want to get so detailed in every contract that you have, tremendous amount of paperwork from Mr. Pinnell at the division saying, well, we'll pay you this for this term and this for that term.
I was, certainly, but I was very concerned that some of the other bidders would not. And then you start looking around and see how many bidders there are. I was, the group that I employ or subcontract to predominantly were in the second class.
The first class did not like the fact that there was a second class. We didn't like the fact that there were several after us. You created a large group of auditors that, so there was some very low bids, and most of us bid where we were either going to have the contractor or we were going to have these fellows out of work. But our overhead is running like any other company, I would say 50% or more.
Would you think there's fair compensation now, considering the extremes that you might have to go to evaluate one home or another?
There's a man at Harding Lake that really would like to have an audit. We probably will never get up there to do it. That's my problem. We're not, there's outlying areas that really could use some auditing that they'll be the last on the list.
Mr. Pennell, is there any answer we have for those outlining individuals that perhaps there could be a special consideration of each of them?
No, this has been one of the problems we've faced with going to the legislative district as a whole. We've run into some situations where there's been a whole city without any audits because auditors living in the outlying areas or other areas bid lower in this procedure. We're reviewing that procedure to address that other problem. But one of the approaches to this is to increase the number of auditors. One of the ideas is to have auditors spread out across all of Alaska, so that in villages, in whatever, you have a person who can speak to with knowledge about what conservation is.
Now that you jogged my memory, I was very much a concern of the legislators to spread out the business, and then also people in the outlying areas as your own neighbor helping the other one instead of, and then also the fact of whether that's what's going to decrease the cost to somebody from Fairbanks or Anchorage flying out to different villages, as evidently they did last year, and got 300 whatever it was per home. So this was hopeless, spreading out the wealth.
I might add, too, that in the bidding, we did have people identify what community they were bidding for. It was quite apparent that if a bidder was resident in a particular community, his bid was much lower than the same bidder traveling down the highway. The situation that's mentioned here is maybe as time goes on, when the market gets more saturated in Fairbanks, that the auditors will look to going down the highway and bid accordingly, because that's where the market will be.
I have no more questions. Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. It looks like we have mostly people here to visit and to observe. If there's anyone at this time that would like to give some testimony, that, yes, sir, please come forward.
My name is Henry Wajicki. I'm the president of the Fairbanks Painters Union. And my testimony is mainly a couple of questions I have for Mr. Prunella here. I was interested in getting into the auditing business myself, particularly after reading a newspaper where they're making $1,700 a day.
Excuse me, was that a recent article or was that last year?
No, it was last month.
Last month. Okay.
And my research into it has shown that the as the people here testified, the bidding for audit contracts is primarily the method of bringing down the cost per unit of auditing. And Mr. Prunella mentioned that it went down to bids from between $60 to $180. My understanding is that the next contracts will be put up for bid in December, is that correct?
Yes.
And the method of certifying auditors is a so-called challenge exam, is that correct?
That is one of the processes. usually the method is to attend a training course and then take the test at the end of that. What we've had is a number of people who are, say, professional auditors outside the state, coming into the state to work for utilities, or have been engineers or architects involved in the industry, or construction people, believing they were, you know, had the capability to pass our requirements to be an auditor. What we are doing right now is, what you're speaking of is a challenge test. In other words, where a person feels he doesn't have to go to this process. We are going through a mechanism to establishing a challenge test, and that should be on the streets here in about the end of November, is what we're speaking of. But that'll provide a mechanism for someone to become a certified auditor fairly rapidly. But the key thing there is that what we're talking about is state procedures, too, and that whoever takes this challenge test has to be aware of what is required and what the state program is. And those manuals for the program stuff will be available at university bookstores and stuff.
Yeah, well, I've been in contact with Manuel over here, and I've had his own personal books and discussed with him. And he, you know, he is running the training program for this, and so I've been pretty much aware of what the program is and had access to the curriculum and the training materials. But the point I was trying to get to was that it seemed to me that the state wasn't going to broaden its the department wasn't going to broaden its pool of potential bidders for this contract prior to the putting the contract up for bid, and that seemed to me to be against the whole basic idea of broadening the base of the competitive bid to give the taxpayer the best break, dollars per audit. Is that correct, or will the potential pool of bidders be as broad as possible by allowing new people into the bidding process, you know, before the bids are up?
Our idea is to encourage as much competition and to seek as many audits of best quality as possible. And that, to me, as we were talking about earlier, we're looking to address, to me, having the broadest base possible, the number of auditors, solves a lot of problems with the whole program. So as far as challenge testing and certification, that will be available. We're also we'll be offering some training courses prior to this next program, too.
So prior to the bidding in December, which will be for the next contract, do you expect to have a mechanism for including new potential bidders?
Yes, definitely.
That was the main question I had. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I want to apologize to Mr. Gulf Kennedy, because I didn't realize he might guest here. Mr. Kennedy here now?
Yes.
Would you like to give testimony, sir?
Oh, just for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Last step down for only about 2 minutes. My name was way back on the list.
Okay, I am a certified energy auditor. I would not like to speak in that capacity necessarily, except to say that I'm aware of somewhat energy auditing procedures. I'm speaking as a homeowner and as a friend of a homeowner. One of the difficulties I have encountered is once a person's had an energy audit done for the home, sometimes you run into difficulty operating from that piece of paper and trying to get the house into a shape that is good for saving energy. I've encountered several problems in trying to get somebody to write up a proposal to have my house retrofitted, and then find the person who has done that proposal is no longer there. So I have to go back to my energy auditor and say, would you redo this so that it can be done, so that I can get my house taken care of. When we realize that an energy auditor may not have a contract at the time in which I want to get my house done. That creates a problem. When we realize that the energy auditor, who may have been a contractor with a firm such as Mr. Noreen's, no longer works for that outfit, you have that kind of difficulty. If I lived at 42 Mile down the Richardson Highway and I say, hey, would you come out and redo it, there would be very little incentive for the energy auditor to go out there and to redo the energy audit so that I could get my house retrofitted. In fact, I found instances where a friend has had an energy audit which called for storm doors. Now, why the energy auditor suggested storm doors rather than thermal doors, I don't know. But then you have to go through a lot of red tape to find the energy auditor, to go back, and if not, the energy auditor is not there, then you have to find somebody in that outfit who will do it for you. And if, as we've had an example of a recent instance, the person who was going to do it came down with the flu. There's just a tremendous amount of bureaucratic hassle, and I don't know that it's entirely necessary. It would seem to me that if we created somewhere an incentive for persons who have to have their home, their energy audits done again or changed to reflect realities, that there would be an incentive for the energy auditor to do that. A $5 or $10 fee to the energy auditor may be something that wouldn't cost the state anything except for the cost of revising their regulations. But I don't have any complaints about the energy auditor's practices. I think that in my experience, these people have been willing to make the changes. But when we are talking about a widespread system, I think that if there are no incentives for the energy auditor, and in fact there are penalties for energy auditors to go back and make the necessary changes in audits, that we are going to sooner or later have a system which bogs down and which is going to be to a certain extent self-defeating. I would also like to address one other aspect of the energy audit program, and that is a $5,000 loan. I shelled out $2,000 to have my attic insulated. I shelled out $600 to have my basement insulated. I shelled out $900 to have two new windows put in, and I had to put the new windows in because the person who insulated my attic took out my windows and did not replace them. I have to spend $2,100 getting new doors put in and tightened up, and in addition to that, I have applied for a state loan for $5,000 to have insulated siding put in on my house. I've had to pay an additional $600 onto that. I estimate I'm going to spend about $10,000 of my own money, $5,000 of my own money and $5,000 from the state loan on my house this year. That is approximately $2,000 under my yearly salary. Don't ask me how I'm doing it. It seems to me somewhat inequitable that there is a statewide limit for the amount of energy-saving loans. For a Fairbanks person to have the same amount of money available for retrofitting a house as a person in Sitka does not seem to me to be entirely equitable. I'm not quite sure how to go about making such changes, but it seems to me those of us in Fairbanks who live in houses have to spend a lot more money retrofitting a house than somebody in Sitka would. And how this is reflected on some basis of equality, I'm not sure, but I would like to point out that problem. I could very easily spend $15,000 on retrofitting my house the way I would like to. That's about all I have to say. I would entertain any questions you might have. I don't know if anyone else has brought up this point. I'm speaking as a homeowner.
When you get into equality and subsidization, having to say the least, like our student loans this year here, some legislators say let's be generous to students, the poor, needy students, there's no reason why a child should, because of his family income, should not be allowed to go to college. So up the loan, the loans go up to 6,000 and then skyrocket, and now we're in debt. Now people are raising all these canes. How dare you? You know, you're out of money. What they thought was going to be $25 million, and up being $46 million bucks in loans. Don't say what the answer is, and then take the discipline of their banks. The answer is that all those rich people are filthy old people. How dare them take a loan when they don't need it? Poor Johnny that needs it. And rich people say, where's equality? You know, who are we going to treat who?
Well,
it goes along the line of food stamp programs and everything. And
well, number one, this is, I'm not sure that I would like to equate myself with a food stamp recipient. I've lived in this state for 14 years, and as a matter of fact, I came to the state in 1961, and it wasn't until 1968 that I drew a salary. I subsidized the state of Alaska for 2 years by working as a volunteer.
Okay. If we did it by regionalization, then should we also do it by income? Why should a person that's making a good salary, $100,000 here, be able to get a 5% loan to upgrade his home when you're suffering and you need it more than he does?
Well, I don't know that I would want to get into that. When I talk about regionalization, I'm talking about a precedent that has already been set in place. Fairbanks state employees do get an allowance for the high cost of living in Fairbanks. What I'm suggesting, a parallel situation, is that Fairbanks homeowners, in fact, have to spend a lot more on insulation and on heating than their fellow Alaskans in Sitka, and as you are in Anchorage with your cheap gas.
I don't think gas.
Pardon?
Expensive electricity.
Okay, well.
Wrong home.
Wrong home, right region, huh? Okay. That's what I'm suggesting. If, in fact, the basis of the program, Mr. Prunella can check me out on this, if the basis of program is to save energy, then if that is our goal, we can save a lot more energy by reflecting the loan program to reflect the realities in regions. We can, if we have a $10,000 loan or a $7,000 loan, whatever loan limit we put on that reflects Fairbanks and compares it to Sitka, we will in fact save energy. And if that is our intent, then we can do this best with a loan program that reflects geographical realities and climate realities.
Oh, well, I can, you know, how far you want to take
it. The legislative realities.
Why don't we move UAF down to Juneau? Look how much energy we're saving. Fantastic amount of energy.
Well,
the thing is, once we get into it, there's nice enough divisiveness with us that it's now on issues. But when we're going to, you know, not get every loan program down to regionalization and for this income and for this year, you're splitting hairs so bad, and it costs more this division than it's really worth. And the cost of doing that too,
well,
you know, in administration work and all. I always thought that, you know, extremely fortunate now we're getting this much. Some people, well, you gave us this much, why not more?
Well, number one, I've already spent my money. I've already spent my $5,000 or $7,000 on my own pocket. It's not going to affect me. I'm talking about a principle, and I'm not asking for a handout. I've given the state of Alaska handouts for 2 years, I'm reflecting a loan program. Now, it might be a consideration that the higher loan be balanced by a higher percentage. That is to say, if we had a situation where A Fairbanksan could have a $10,000 loan and have to pay 10%, while as a person from Anchorage had a $5,000 loan at 5%, I think we would have a degree of equity, and we would still come up with the principle of saving energy, which is what I assume this whole program is all about.
Interesting point, thank you very much. The next gentleman looks like Mr. George Fiedler, or Fiedler, is that?
Jeff. Close enough. I'm Jeff Filer. I'm with Heat Loss Analysis from Anchorage, Alaska. We are currently the largest state contractor for energy audits. We have contracts for over 4,000 audits in Anchorage and some in McGrath, and currently working on a program for Anaktuvik Pass. There are a number of things. Maybe a little background on heat loss. We've been in the energy audit business for quite a while before the state had a program. We developed our own computer system based on expecting that the federal building energy performance standards would be implemented, and that some sort of rating for residences similar to EPA ratings for automobiles would be in effect nationwide. Of course, this hasn't happened, but we still use our, when the program, state audit program began, we had been doing audits to make people eligible for grants and loans before there were contracts for state certified auditors. We no longer use our computer program because the cost of the audit is lower than we can afford to process audits with the computer system. Some of the problems that we have had in the past with the audit program have been essentially resolved with these new contracts as far as paperwork and dealing with the division. Some of the more specific things that have been recently worked out or in the process of being worked out are the training provisions for auditors. In the past, there were no prerequisites for anybody to get involved in an energy training program. They just had to be one of the first people to sign up. We have recommended that the state essentially get out of the training process altogether and to certify energy auditors or other qualified people as energy audit trainers. They could be contractors, engineers, architects, anyone that met certain criteria of being able to having experience in education fields and alternative energy fields, conservation, things like that. It would essentially be a situation that would be similar to pilot training or anything like that, where if a person wanted to become an auditor, they could go to a trainer and either pay a fee or agree to work for that trainer. And all the state would have to do in that situation would provide the testing for certification. And there would be a requirement that the auditor trainee meet certain conditions that would be signed off by the trainer. The other, we've talked with Jan and Lloyd about this quite a bit, and I think that we've made quite a bit of progress in that area. The other problem that we have had as contractors is essentially the two per day limitation that's been put by the Senate letter of intent on energy auditors. This letter of intent was written before the energy audit program was changed for the new contract period, with the forms being much shorter. There's a lot less paperwork involved. It allows the auditor to spend a lot more time educating the homeowner, which is, as Lloyd said earlier, probably the biggest advantage to the audit program. The two per day limitation seems to be a political limitation, and it just really, for example, if an auditor has two audits scheduled for a day, and he goes to the first one, he completes that, goes to the second one, and the homeowner doesn't show up, well, he's got half his day shot already. And because of there's a 2-hour minimum time that an audit can be completed in. And it generally takes probably closer to 3 hours to complete an audit. I think a 3-per-day limitation or just a time limitation if people want to work evenings or something like that. And their 2-per-day limitation keeps them from doing that. Another part of the training thing, the way it has been in the past, really did not provide for any effective quality control with auditors. People were managed to take the course and take the test without having to fulfill any OJT requirements. I think this other method would probably alleviate that. One thing regarding the auditors that showed up at your condominium, Mr. Martin, if you live in an apartment-style condominium, then your condominium would not be eligible for, I mean, if they're over and under rather than townhouse style, they're not eligible for audit. So you showed up there.
Six units per building.
Okay. And are they each side by side, or is it one over the other?
We don't.
Okay, so that building would not be eligible at that time to have audits performed on it.
But if there were six in a row, then...
Right. So the criteria that... the criteria that's been set up specifies that each unit must have its own foundation and must have its own heating system, which with electric heat, you don't have the problem there, but when you're over and under type situation, you do not have your own foundation in your...
Legislation said 200 per unit for multi-unit dwelling.
Up to fourplex.
Up to fourplex, right.
Yeah, right.
I had a note on that.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that might be one area we'd want to look at next
right.
year, is maybe at least allowing sixplex.
Regarding what Jeff Kennedy was talking about before, and adjusting the grant or loan amounts for on a regional basis was something that was pretty much in House Bill 9 last year, which Brian sponsored, and it covered quite a few things. It covered a total revamping of the audit program, which the division was essentially behind, and most of the energy auditors that we talked to were behind, and obviously the House passed the bill, so by some margin the House was behind it. It died in Senate committee. It would have allowed for both climatological and regional cost of living factors to be applied to both grant and loan amounts. It would have taken the two loans, the energy conservation loan and the alternative technology loan, and combined the two of them into one loan, and I don't remember what the loan limits would have been on that. But,
business loan limit went up to 100,000.
It went up to 100, and it was something like 20 or 25,000 for residential. So it would have taken care of some of those problems. It also would have changed the bidding process and the way that audits were performed by providing for a two-step audit. The first one, which would be tied to the grant monies, and would have been essentially maybe a 2-hour educational seminar for the homeowner, in which the person would go in with the pamphlets and other educational materials, plus a list of items that would qualify under the grant, things like clock thermostats, say attic insulation that would be easy to install, things that would not require any structural changes to the house, and that would be fairly inexpensive and very cost effective. And the state would subsidize that at about a $50 per audit rate, somewhere around there. Going beyond that, in order to qualify for the loan, it would essentially go into a design phase, and the loans would be primarily focused at major structural retrofits and alternative energy systems. there would be no cost to the state for having the audit performed on for these kind of systems. It would it'd sort of be like the homeowner hiring a consultant to design a retrofit or an alternative energy system for them and help them package the loan. And that's something that we do currently with the alternative technology loans. We design alternative systems and retrofit work and prepare packages for the Division of Business Loans. Another point as far as the...
Jeff, can I ask you, on the first stage of that audit, where rather than the contracting process, the state would just essentially pay for the first $50 and the auditors could charge whatever they wanted and whatever the consumer wanted to buy, do you have any feelings one way or another as to whether that's better than the existing bidding system and certain auditors getting bids and certain not? Essentially, under that proposal, any certified auditor could go out and perform audits and charge whatever the market would bear beyond that $50 level.
Well, I think for that first audit, the $50 level would probably be an equitable fee for a very short audit that did not require any calculations. That was essentially just an educational.
Would have required some for cost effectiveness of a couple of things.
Right, there would have been factors set up for those, so any calculations would have been very simple multiplication. But I think it could be charged. Homeowners would probably find out before too long that they'd be able to get audits for fairly low prices, and if there's a short. It might have been that first audit was 1 hour instead of two also, which would have covered most.
Yeah.
Let's see if I remember what else. As far as the short-lived possibilities of this program, there have been rumors lately that some legislators may try to scrap the program this year or after this year and see that it no longer continues. I think the program will probably not continue more than 3 or 4 more years before all the houses in the state are audited, and if thermal standards either on local levels or on a state level can be set up and enforced for new buildings, then there probably won't need to be any residential energy audits after those that for existing buildings are completed. I know with HELOS analysis, the energy audit program has given us the opportunity to get into a lot of other fields, such as commercial auditing, thermography. We now have a store in Anchorage called the Energy Store, where we help people process their energy audits and provide them with one place where they can go and get all their materials.
There's
the processing is free. Right? We sell them the materials. We help them fill out their grant forms and make sure when they go to the state that are going to inspect.
Well, you will help the agencies that you work with or the suppliers of products. Do they in turn help you because you're sending a kickback?
Well,
we
sell the products directly to.
Oh, you sell the products
right.
directly.
Okay.
A number of companies are doing that. Spinard Builders also, I know, a couple of others are doing the same kind of thing.
Right, absolutely. They'll bring your audit in and they'll help you process it.
Well, you're getting to a point where some time ago, why doesn't the private business do this anyway? I guess only if they see the way there's money when they finally get to it. But like Spinard Builders or the others, we have competing against each other in Anchorage. The TV has a tremendous, you buy here cheap, buy there cheap. Well, why didn't they help the individual out at their own place without federal or state money?
Well, one reason is, in Anchorage, because of the low gas costs, it's harder to convince people to save energy without subsidizing the cost for them. In one way, it's not.
In Fairbanks, it's a little different. We're paying a $500 or $600 a month electric bill, or several hundred dollar a month oil bill. It's fairly easy to be convinced to save energy.
You guys got the money.
It's a lot different from paying $300 or $400 a year to heat your house with natural gas in Anchorage.
That's
why
75% of the HFC money goes to Anchorage.
Jeff, you mentioned one problem that the auditor seemed to have, and the gentleman earlier mentioned, is that when you are limited to two appointments per day, that sometimes the person's not there. Isn't it normally good business practice to call up the day before and remind the folks?
We do do that, and occasionally that it still happens.
And with as many auditors as you contact for, is your system not flexible enough to say, well, okay, so-and-so is not there, go down the street or go five blocks away?
Well, there is a problem that is in that there's a requirement in the regulations that the audit be set up at least 7 days in advance, and that you mail out a questionnaire to the homeowner, and so they really can't
have
that flexibility in that sense. So the auditors have to be, the audits have to be scheduled at least a week in advance.
A lot of the concern in the Senate at the time they passed their letter of intent revolved around the fact that audits were $150 a piece, and they figured $300 minus expenses was adequate. Now with the cost of audits almost half that, it seems to me that that would be logical for the department to extend that, and that the intent is how much money a person was making in a day, not how many audits they can do in a day. And given, it'd be my opinion that given the fact that that letter of intent did not pass both houses, but only passed one house of the legislature, and given the fact that the cost of audits has dropped so substantially, that it would be within the power of the division to allow but that to go to three.
It did serve a purpose, though, that legislative concern, and only because the one came before the other did those bids come down.
My fear, though, is if we continue to limit it to two, that the price of audits might go up so that people can cover their costs of no-shows, and that whereas going to three, the per audit cost might be a little bit lower.
Yeah, but by and large, it takes between 2 and 3 hours to do an effective audit. There's just no way that one can be done well in an hour or less. If we were going to go to a number of audits per day limitation, then three a day would certainly be the best number.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Presentation, appreciate it. I don't see any other person that is listed that would like to give a presentation. Would you? Yes, ma'am. Jane, we'll mark you now, yes.
I think I might have forgotten to check the yes box for testifying.
Jane
Galblum. Yeah. My name's Jane Galblum. I'm with Super Insulated Homes. Now, Mr. Noreen was one of the people that was, how shall we say, fortunate enough to get one of the bids in Fairbanks. Our company was one who bid on the audit contract this summer and did not get any audits. Now, maybe we were more fortunate than he was, considering the price. It brings up a couple problems that I'd like to deal with. I think that the audit program, I'm really pleased to see that it's managed to stay going, because there's no way to improve a program if it's not going. And I think that there's been a lot of real substantial effort on the part of the Division of Energy to improve the program and to listen to auditors and to try to make a program that really works. There's certainly been a substantial effort on the part of auditors to reach homeowners, and a lot of good has already been done. I think that it's a good time to reevaluate the program and talk about some of the things that could possibly be improved. I think that when the division went to a bidding basis for a low bid on the audit contracts, I think that the main issue we were dealing with at that time was the cost of the audits. I think that we've seen that there have been a lot of problems that came up with doing that low bidder method. Here in Fairbanks, of the people that were doing the audits last spring, there were, I think, around 10 or 15 companies that were doing. We were mostly in the first class or so, and we bid on the first round of audits and went through all the hassles with the Division of Energy trying to get the program going, even before they got the training set up. And we experienced doing, you know, all of our audits during the three-month period and so forth. And a lot of them were done in December and January here in Fairbanks at 60 below. And we did receive a good price for the audits, but I never thought that it was more than the amount of effort that we went through to complete the 13-page forms and go to Delta and other kinds of things, and not to mention dealing with the contracting procedures and the recalls from people who come back and are still asking us to redo their forms for various reasons, and which I'll get into later. Therefore, most of the people that bid from the first group of people who had already done audits bid substantially over $100. I think the range was around 118 to around 125. And all the people who had done audits before bid in that same range. And I think that that expressed a knowledge of the job that had to be done and the cost that might be incurred in doing that job. All the people in the second class trying to be competitive bid lower than $100, and they got all the audits. Therefore, in addition to the fact that a large pool of auditors who had some experience and knowledge in the field was out of work, as Bob Noreen said, the people that did get the audit contracts maybe didn't know as much about what they were getting into and are finding that they perhaps bid lower than the amount that it would really take them to complete the end of their contract when they're going to have to go to the Chena Hot Springs Road and Harding Lake and North Pole. If you've ever driven around North Pole in the middle of the winter trying to find some house, you know that that can take an hour right there just getting there and back, not to mention the amount of gas and it's 60 below and your car might not start. It ain't easy all the time. I was displeased that we didn't get the audits. At the same time, I wouldn't have done them for the price that Mr. Noreen is doing them for, and I'm going to tell you why, and some of the things that could be done to the audit procedure itself. If you really want to cut the cost of the audit, I think that the suggestion that Mr. Filer brought up of that we had discussed last year in House Bill 10 and had gotten some discussion of the two-stage audit is really the way to go. This also touches on what Mr. Jeff Kennedy was talking about his problem with getting the work done after he got the audit. Now, currently, the way an audit is done, you go to the house and you have a couple things to figure out. One of them has to do with the amount of energy that the person currently uses in their house, and the amount that they pay for fuel, which can depend on whether they use oil, coal, perhaps a combination of oil and coal, or oil and wood, or maybe electricity. So you can get any kind of varied cost of energy. The second thing you have to figure out in the audit is the payback of the actual measure that you're suggesting that the person do. And if, in your interpretation, they should add 10 inches of cellulose to the ceiling, you have to do an exact payback for the 10 inches of cellulose. If you think that they should add R5 to the walls, you have to do an exact calculation for adding R5 to the walls. And if you think they should add a storm door, you have to do a calculation for a storm door, which is different than that for a thermal door. Now, if you do a conscientious job on your audit, and then the person goes and finds out that the people at the siding company are selling siding, and the R value on the siding is R8, well, the payback for the R5 doesn't apply anymore. You have to go back and recalculate what the payback for adding the R8 is to make sure they can afford that. At the same time, if you did a calculation for the, say, a triple pane window, and the cost of the triple pane window that the person wants to get, you know, they go out and pick out a nice Anderson window that they're going to replace their Visqueen with, and well, maybe the cost is a few dollars more than the exact payback for the triple pane window, whereas that might be because they tried to be real efficient and their fuel bills are low and they're heating with coal, whereas the neighbor next door with the same house that doesn't burn coal or doesn't have a wood stove has a higher fuel cost. They can get the Anderson window because the payback is different by maybe a few dollars.